Hey, everybody, it's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest, your guys are going to love, because you know that I get very hyperventilating over this thing called follow-up. There is actually now a book that talks about follow-up soup to nuts, and it's written by Jeff Shore, who is our guest today. He's written a book called Follow-Up and Close the Sale, Make Easy and Effective Follow-Up Your Winning Habit. Now, Jeff is also a speaker and an author. He has a website. I'll make sure I put all of that in the show notes for you. But the key here is that he's been doing this for 30 plus years. So he is the go-to guy. And I think with the follow-up potential that I know you all have, but maybe haven't developed that endurance muscle, this book will help you get on track and help you get to the point where you do this thing called follow-up on either an everyday basis or a couple times a week, whatever it is that fits into your pipeline objectives. But he is the man, and he's here to talk to us about this book. And I'm so happy that this book has been written. So, Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Let's have some fun.
Okay, let's have some fun. So let's talk about the book. First of all, Why? Why now? Why did you write the book? You know, you've been doing this for 30 years. What happened in your life that you said, okay, trigger event, it's time to do this book for people?
Right. Yeah. Well, there are a couple of answers to that question. One is, if you go on Amazon and you type in sales follow-up, you're going to be pretty sparse in what you're going to find there as far as resources. And a lot of people have spoken about it. I certainly know you have a great deal over the years. People write blog posts and articles and stuff, but there hasn't been that just sort of one spot where you can get it all together. But the other reason, which is definitely more speaking to the psychology mind first and then to the readers, is that I think a lot of salespeople don't think of follow-up, whether that's pre-sale follow-up as part of their prospecting, or what to do when the customer says not yet and before you get that sale. Either way, I think most sales professionals see follow-up as being, it's not fun. It's just, they look at it as laborious and a chore that they have to check the box so they, you know, appease their CRM or don't get in trouble. And I want to really change the thinking of that. I think follow-up can be fun. I think follow-up should be fun. And when it's fun for you, it's certainly more enjoyable for the customer.
Definitely. And there's a lot of, as you said, there's a lot of reason to follow up. And it's actually easier than when you and I got involved into sales.
No doubt.
And there weren't these tools out there. I mean, I wouldn't say effortless, but it's definitely further along so that you can build a follow-up, what we call sequence or playlist, mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call it, to actually mm-hmm. reach out to people. And you basically have the rocket engine there, but you need to add the value. And why are you reaching out and what are you doing? So how did you organize the book for us? And is it the kind of book where we can dive in at any section, or do you want us to follow along as like a story?
Yeah, you do it. You can really do it either way. The book is laid out to say, let's talk about your mindset first, then let's talk about the customer's mindset, then we'll get into skills and techniques and scripts and everything else. But it starts with a discussion about the resistance, that part of us that doesn't love uncomfortable things. And so if we see follow-up as something that is a wildly uncomfortable task, our brain is going to come along and say, no, you don't have to do that. In fact, I'm going to give you some juicy rationalizations why you should not. And we've got to overcome the mental hurdle first in order to do this. But the real important foundational piece in the book is to think about it from the perspective of a customer. So if you think about a customer who's in the process of shopping, and it could be for anything at all, but when you're in that shopping process, what's happening? You're in a time of what I refer to as high emotional altitude. And emotional altitude measures your degree of positive emotional energy with a product, with a person, or with an experience. So recently, my wife and I, like many people, we got a quarantine dog. And, you just think about the process that you're going through when you're shopping for a dog. You are emotionally engaged in that process. Mm-hmm. But what happens here is that I've engaged now with that product, with a website, with a salesperson, whatever it happens to be. Now what happens? If I'm not ready to pull the trigger, then time has a way of eroding that emotional altitude.
So the purpose of follow-up in the first place is to sustain emotional altitude, to keep that customer emotionally engaged, feeling very positive. We are emotional creatures. We make emotional decisions. So those that sustaining that emotional altitude is going to be just critical. The longer we wait or the more we abdicate our follow-up to simply an email that's cranked out by the system, the less likely it will be that we'll keep that customer in that positive emotional place.
Okay. So there's a mindset thing here. And I know you say in the book, you know, fall in love with follow-up. I used to say fortune in follow-up because I'm sort of driven as a process person, I'm driven to outcomes. But, right. you know, there is the emotional component of loving to do this because, you know, can you give our audience an idea of the conversations that they're having? We used to always say, you know, mapping calls, it's 85% fun and 15%, you know, not so fun. What is follow-up? Is when you have the right mindset, is every call a fun call or is there a nice ratio that people can get excited about?
Well, I think it can be. I mean, I think you have to start by answering the question, what is follow-up not? And, you know, my friend Art Sobchak, I don't know if you've ever had him on the podcast.
Oh,
but,
yes. He's been on my show twice.
And he's fantastic. And when I had him on my podcast, we were talking about what he calls parole officer check-ins, right? Just checking in. And that's not follow-up, right? Just checking in to see when I'm going to get paid. Just checking in to see if I can meet my quota. That's not follow-up. So we have to look at it first and ask, well, what is follow-up for? And so to me, I look at it and say, your primary purpose is to serve. And if you are serving, then that mental script that says, I don't want to be a nuisance, I don't want to be guilty of intrusion marketing and an interrupter dinner. Well, if you're serving, if you are truly seeking to serve, A, it will be fun, and B, you're not being intrusive in any way. So yes, there is that mindset change that has to look and say, well, what am I trying to accomplish here in the first place? And I just am so fully behind the idea that this is what salespeople do. They serve and they solve problems. And if I could just share one example of what that would look like. If you've got a medical problem, and you go and you meet with your physician, and your physician, you chat a little bit, and they suggest, you know, here she's going to suggest you should probably do this, and then we'll check back with you here soon. All right. The next evening at 6:30, you get a call from your physician, who says, you know, I was thinking about after you left, I was thinking about your situation, was thinking about your problem. I talked to some colleagues, I did a little research, and I think I've got a solution here. That it's not going to hurt you. So it's certainly worth trying. Would you like to hear about it? Now, look, you want to hear about that. And yes. you wouldn't say to your physician at that point, it's dinner time. I'm in the middle of dinner. How dare you call me to talk about how to solve my problem when I'm in the middle of dinner? That's not what you would do. So the question here is, when you are reaching out to your customer, are you reaching out just to try and figure out how quickly you're going to get paid? Or you're reaching out to say, you have a significant problem. I've been thinking about it and I've got a creative solution here for you. So how you approach that, I think, is just critical.
Yes. Empathy and, you know, those words that you hear a lot about relationship, I think is really important with the follow-up sequence. And it's not necessarily trusted advisor yet to that level, but it is just letting them know that you care about them and you're working on trying to figure out ways to help. I love the way you say pain or pride or pride, because we're so used to this pain and gain thing, and gain is subjective, but pride just puts, that's the right word. So I made sure I wrote that down when I was listening to your videos, that that's such a good way to think about adding value, is they do have challenges, unwanted obstacles, risks, you know, obstacles that are in their way to get stuff done. But there's also this pride element and what they hope to gain from that and how that's going to reflect either on them personally, socially, functionally, or strategically, that I think we lose sight of that sometimes in the follow-up process. So I was really happy that you delineated that way. A lot of times our guys are concerned about the whole, I can't provide value at every touch.
I just fundamentally disagree with that concept. It takes creativity. You need to know your customer pretty darn well, but I do believe that you can provide value at every touch. And I do think that it starts by saying, not just what does their life look like when their problem is solved or what is the solution to the problem, but again, we are emotional creatures. How do they want to feel when this problem is solved? That's where that pride comes into play. So if we're creative with that, I think creativity is one of the superpowers for salespeople. If you look at it, you think through how well do I know. Now, if you don't know your customer very well, then I agree. It's very difficult to add value every time. But if you know your customer well, if you know the ins and outs of their life or their business of who it is that they are, I don't think it's as difficult as we sometimes think it is to continually add value.
I agree. And I think also there is a process for those of you who are like, Mary Lou, I can't figure this out. There is a process of delineating row by row, if you will, how you serve. And what the beauty of follow-up is that you can articulate how you serve as we were talking about. There's a pain. Or there's a pride component. So a pain component would be one way you may describe that if they don't do something, then, you know, that means they're going to be in this pain zone for longer than they really want to be, or they really should be, or because you have a solution now that can get them to where they want to go. But you also have something that gets them far beyond where they want to go, and that's your differentiator. So I think there's a lot of ways that you can articulate the conversation in that touch, that follow-up touch, that says the same pain point, but in a variety of different ways, strategically, financially, and personally, how that's going to affect them, especially in business to business. So I try to get people to understand that let's pretend you only know three or four pains that your client or prospect is likely to experience through the lens of your product or service. You can articulate that pain point in a variety of ways to hit those emotional triggers, like you said. And that's where I think we lose sight. We try to have unique pains on every touch. And a lot of times that doesn't happen. In the real world, it could only be one thing that they're concerned about. But if you can articulate it in five different ways, one of those ways is probably going to resonate with them so that they will want to reach out and get back to you.
And in the meantime, you are out carrying everybody else because you are consistently asking yourself the question, how do I solve your problem? Not just how do I stay in your face, but how do I solve your problem? And, you know, I was just thinking just this weekend, interestingly enough, my wife and I are going to switch up financial planners, wealth managers, whatever they call themselves these days.
Yep.
We had looked at it and said, we got to make a move on that one. And so where do you start? I mean, it just doesn't sound like a very fun task. And my wife listens to the Dave Ramsey podcast quite a bit. And so she said, you know, he does this thing where you can enter in your information and then they're going to connect you with five financial planners in your area based on who you are and what your needs are. So I did that. So this was on Saturday morning. I filled it out and immediately I get a text message immediately. Now it's an auto response, but the text message says, I just sent you an email from this guy named Marshall Goins. I just sent you an email. There's a 30-second video. Would love it if you would watch that video. I go over to my video. There it is. It's him saying, this is the weekend. I'm not working, but we're going to talk on Monday. I just want to be able to put a face to the name here. Really look forward to chatting with you. That's on Saturday. On Monday morning, he calls at 8:20. I don't recognize the phone number, so I don't answer the call, but I get a text message just after. Hey, just left you a voicemail. I'm in my office all day long. Let's chat. So that's 4 points of contacts, right? Two text messages, a phone call, and an email. And we're not 48 hours in. For the other 4 people that I got connected with, I got 2 form emails that said, click on this calendar app over here to book a time to talk to one of our financial specialists. And I have to tell you, before we could even have a conversation with this guy, he's already the front runner. He's lapped the field. He would have to fall on his face. I would need to figure out this guy is a pedophile not to use him at this point. And why? Because I think the idea here is that we learn or we teach our customers through follow-up how much we care. This is so critical. We teach how much we care. And when we don't follow up, what we are teaching is that we don't really care, at least not to the level that our customers need us to.
Right. And I think in the book, you talk about the speed of follow-up and how critical. Impactful that can be.
Yeah.
And again, the technology is here, people, for us to do this. You heard Jeff say that first one he knew or felt that it was an auto response. But again, it's the speed in which the follow-up occurred that makes the person on the other end think, wow, they really do care about me. They really do respond to me. And if this is something that is started at the beginning, the expectation is once I become a client, it'll be the similar levels of service.
Mm-hmm. Precisely.
I love that.
I think that speed is critical. Sometimes we think about follow-up and we think, oh, what is this cycle going to look like for the next 90 days? And I think that puts you in a spot where you're probably going to start wrong because you're thinking about the laborious nature of follow-up. Now, I don't think you should be thinking about 90 days. I think you should be thinking about 90 seconds. I think you got to be able to look at it and say, how do I stand out from everybody else right away? And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, emotional altitude. The more time that lapses between a point of contact with the customer and the time that we get back to them, the more they become unmoored, distance from that emotional altitude. So that speed is critical just to stay connected, keep that emotional altitude high.
100%. Besides mindset, then, the next step in the book, I think, was talking about the strategy of follow-up.
Yeah.
And are there any pieces out of that section that you want to make sure we talk about on this call to make sure that people get that in that right zone of what they need to do once the mindset is there?
The number one way that salespeople choose to follow up is through email.
Okay.
The very least effective way to follow up is through email. So we've got to come to grips with this right from the very beginning. And I'm not going to say, and I make this very clear in the book, I'm not going to say there's no room for email and follow-up. And that's not the position that I take. The question is, why is email the number one way to follow up? And the reason is because it's easy. So I make this decision based on what is easy for me versus what is impactful for the customer. Fact of the matter is that in the United States today, a little over 80% of emails get deleted without being read. And even those that do get a cursory glance, sometimes we delete them just by looking at the subject line itself. But there are just, it is a way for a customer to very quickly dismiss you. And yet we can sort of pat ourselves back on the back, check the box and say, well, I did my follow-up. No, you didn't. And so I want to suggest here that one of the key messages in the book is let the message choose the medium. So there are times where in a long conversation with the customer, and I want to be able to send something that a document, a PDF or whatever it is, great, perfect use of email. But to look at it and say, you know, let's connect on some personal level, or let's connect with how I can solve your problem some way. No, this is best done by telephone or by video chat. So when we look at it, there's a communication hierarchy that we have to keep in mind. Face-to-face, always most impactful. We know that. Second to that, video to video. Beyond that, phone to phone. But way down the list is that asynchronous communication where I'm sending an email that somebody in all likelihood statistically will never even see in the first place. And if we think that that email is going to sustain emotional altitude, we're kidding ourselves. Even the email that I got from this financial advisor, it was preceded by a text message that said, I just sent you an email. There's a video in it I would love for you to watch. It's only 30 seconds. And that was great. I was like, 30 seconds? Yeah, I got 30 seconds. And it connected me with that person because I wanted to get that email. It wasn't a nuisance. I wasn't going to delete it. I knew it was coming. It was perfectly executed.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, we're right now when we're recording this, we're in the middle of the health crisis for the United States, which means that sometimes the phone, if your database or your setup isn't like mine right now, it's only brick and mortar. It's not individual lines of direct dial into that person. So we do have to be a little bit chameleon as we navigate through how to reach people. But I think, you know, you mentioned the video to video as being one of the top besides face to face. And you say in the book that you don't have to have the perfect video setup.
Right.
It's the authenticity of the message. It's the empathetic nature of the message. It's your enthusiasm as you convey the message. That's more important than whether you have the right lighting or the right microphone or video camera. And that really hit home with me a lot.
Look, your client already FaceTimes with their grandkid. Your client already, you know, uses Marco Polo if they're a millennial, whatever. I mean, we are in the video age. In just be, again, relative to the pandemic, back in December, Zoom had 10 million subscribers. As of 2 months ago, when I looked at the article, there was 300 million subscribers. Wow. We have learned video. We have figured out video. The whole world has figured out video, including our customers. There is no reason at this point for us to look at it and say, no, I'm just not comfortable, because your desire for comfort might very well be the one thing that's standing in the way of serving your clients the best. We are in the video age. Make no mistake about it. It's only a question of whether or not you're going to jump on that train or, frankly, get left behind.
Right, definitely. Okay, so we move on from strategy to the actual execution. Yeah. And you did have some great ideas in there. And I want everyone to listen to your definition of the lead conversion hour, because that again, I teach the power of habit, borrowed from a bunch of experts in the field. But there's they teach the five levels of habit, which starts with desire. The very next step is repetition. Then there's discipline and routine, and then finally habit. And it really folded nicely into what you were talking about at the lead conversion hour. Would you share that with us?
Sure. When it starts with a premise, when everything is critical, nothing is critical. You can't have 18 priorities at a given time. So it starts by asking the question, what really matters? In what it is that I do, what really matters? And I'm of the opinion that if you're a sales practitioner in any walk of life, what really matters is lead conversion. What are we doing here? We've got this lead. We've got this customer over here. How do I solve their problem and make sure that it is fully and perfectly solved? So as I look at it from that side, if lead conversion is that push, then not only do I want to focus on that, but I want to make sure that there is a dedicated time early in the day where I can focus on what matters most. For most sales practitioners, you could theoretically hit your office or start your day at 8 a.m. theoretically with no phone messages, no emails, nothing on your to-do list. Again, this is all theoretical. And by 8:45, you'll be busy. And you'll be busy all day long. You can, if you are in sales, lead a completely reactive life, just trying to juggle all of the issues and concerns and problems that are going to wrap up. But we've got to look at it and ask the question, how do we make it? This is Stephen Covey, right? The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. What is your main thing? And I look at it and say, the main thing is lead conversion. Well, if it is, let's get that done early. For a couple of different reasons. For one thing, you called your customers early. You're doing your follow-up work early in the day. You've given them the entire day to respond versus calling at 4 o'clock, and by the time they call back, you're gone. A second thing is that the longer you wait, the less chance it's going to get done at all. Oh, I'll do it later. Oh, I'll do it later. The next thing you know, later turns out to be never. It just doesn't get done. Another reason to do it early on, you're fresh. You know, our bodies are built that way. By the time we get into the afternoon, we're at the low point of our circadian rhythm, you're still fresh. Oh, and your client is still fresh as well early on in the day. You get a good solid hour of your follow-up work done, of your lead conversion work done by 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the morning. Man, you're ready to take on the world. You are victorious, regardless of how the rest of the day goes, because you're in charge of your success. So it's a matter of getting it on the calendar, of turning it into a ritual and letting that ritual become a habit over time. But at that point, what happens? You are in charge. You're not waiting for the phone to ring with that magic new client. No, you're getting that done. It's a beautiful way to be able to start your day on the right foot.
Yeah, exactly. And what I also recommend for our listeners, especially those who are focused on outbound conversations, outreach, is that you use this follow-up system with vendors and partners who sell companion products into your world with the same client types, and start building this network of people, because then all of a sudden the referral channel will start opening up to you to help along with the follow-up of clients and prospects you're working right now. A lot of times when we get into this rhythm, this muscle, this endurance of follow-up, we're able to expand the gravitational pull of people now coming to us with new leads and new opportunities to work, which gets us further up that funnel of awareness. So people already know, love, and trust us, so to speak, because they've been referred in. And follow-up is such a big option to use. It's like the tool in the toolkit that's the most powerful tool there to get going. So if you're in the audience and you're thinking, okay, this sounds great. Where do I start, Jeff? What do you recommend that they do to get kind of just immersed in a little bit more on the whole follow-up process and where they should start and how they should go about doing this? What do you recommend for that?
Well, first of all, when I look at Dan Sullivan, the founder of the Strategic Coach Program, you know, one of the things that he says here is that all change begins by telling the truth. And so it really starts by asking yourself the question, how do you feel about follow-up and why do you feel that way? What is that based on? What's happening in your life that would cause you to think through, this is something that's problematic for me. This is something mm-hmm. that I don't like doing. This is something that I don't enjoy. And so it really begins with that. Just coming to grips with the idea, what are the stories that you're telling yourself? And if you can turn that outward and say, what is this for my customer? What does this mean to my customer? How do I serve? I think that's absolutely the starting point. But then you got to look at it and say, how do I make it fun? And I think we make it most fun. We make it most personal and more creative. If we can look into those opportunities, again, not, you know, my system should be in place for what a 90-day follow-up program looks like, but start thinking about it in terms of minutes, not days. That's when it's the most enjoyable. Use this time to get creative, to stand out from everybody else, because you're doing things that they're not doing. Make it fun. If it's not fun for you, it's not going to be fun for your customer.
100%. And I remember reading the story of Bill Porter. I'd like to end with you telling us his story so that you can get an understanding here in the audience, folks, that this is something within your reach. This is something that I think when you hear stories like this, you realize you're starting off in such a better position to begin with. And the hill is not going to be as high to climb. So if you'll share that story with us, I would love that.
Yeah, it's one of the most inspiring stories ever. A gentleman by the name of Bill Porter, he in time became the number one salesperson for a company called Watkins Industries. This was a couple of decades ago, back still when it was tailing out, but when door-to-door sales were the thing. And he sold household products, cleaning products, all kinds of different things out of a catalog door-to-door. His territory was in the hilly area of Portland, Oregon. And in fact, he had to beg to get that job, just say, give me your worst route, the route that nobody else will take. And he got it. And he would walk 7 miles a day in rainy Portland uphills. Oh, one last thing. Bill Porter suffered from cerebral palsy. He had a hard time walking. He had a hard time speaking, communicating. And what happened over time? He had more doors slammed in his face than he could ever count. He once got hit by a car, still finished his route, by the way. But his tenacity is amazing. There was a movie made about this. William H. Macy did a phenomenal job. It's called Door to Door. Very, very high recommend. Even if you're not in sales, it is an incredibly powerful story about the human spirit. But when you look at that, there is this idea where Bill Porter didn't end up being a salesperson. He ended up being a part of people's lives. And when Bill Porter retired, his customers were devastated. A part of their life was lost at that point because he had so stepped in to saying, how can I serve you? And I just love that. Those people who would look at it and say, you know, follow-up is all about, you're wrangling that next dollar. There's a client behind that door and they got a dollar and it's got my name on it. And, you know, this is, I just reject all of this idea. The question is, how do I serve? How do I serve? And if I can get a serve first mentality, then I can make follow-up fun, both for me and for my customer.
And to finish that story, you mentioned about the knee of the curve, which was definitely the Bill Porter story. And I know that it's our story as well. So elaborate on that. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, the knee of the curve. The idea that oftentimes we put in efforts over a long period of time and we don't really see the dramatic results. We see just slow incremental growth. And then we hit what economists call the knee of the curve. And it's when all of that effort now starts to pay off. And what had started out as a line that was almost horizontal, just trickling up a little bit in our response, suddenly shoots up. There's that bend, that knee of that curve. and it shoots up. And so we tend to look at it and go, oh no, I didn't get anywhere with that last call. And if that was Bill Porter's mindset, then you can forget it. He would have quit a long time ago. It's that staying with it, that stick-to-itiveness that suddenly you're going to look at, you're going to say, I am miles ahead of my competition. I paid the price. They didn't see it. They didn't get to see all the hard work that went into it. Now they're shaking their head saying, what is that guy doing? And that's not the question. The question should be, what has that person been doing for the longest time as a habit of follow-up to be able to get where he or she is today?
Right. That consistency of effort. And I think in the book, you mentioned the Beatles, who we all think of as overnight success story. Yeah, but in fact,
well, they splashed in the United States. And yeah, they splashed on the United States. Like, who are these guys? Where did they come from? Out of nowhere. It wasn't out of nowhere. It was literally playing gigs 8 hours in a row in a club in Germany with nobody in the audience. But the owner telling them, listen, when you stop playing, then for sure nobody's going to come in. And so they played and they played and they played. You didn't see the hard work that went into it. All you saw was the end result. Or to put it another way, it takes a long time to become an overnight sensation.
There you go. So the book is called Follow Up and Close the Sale. Make easy and effective follow-up your winning habit. Jeff, thank you so much for your time today. Very much appreciated. I'll be sure to put all your links of how to get a hold of you. So Jeff also has, which my team has listened to, 9 videos that accompany his book that will give you a good jump start on where to get started, how to get started. And he talks in detail about the different ways we can communicate. The video, there's a big video. I think there's all video on video, as a matter of fact. And I think, so those are great getting started things. And then I'll make sure that we put all your connection information if people want to talk to you directly. Thanks so much for your time. Very much appreciated.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you.